Hi, it's Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. The title of this interview is called How to Take Ownership of Your Life So You Can Choose the One You Want. It's an interview with Manual for Living author Seth David Chernoff. It's easy to let circumstances get you down, especially if you don't make enough money or you hate your job. Maybe you're in a stressful relationship or you don't drive the nicest car. Truth is, we're not the sum total of our possessions, our job, or our relationships, but we are the sum total of our choices. The good news is, that means you're not stuck. And in this audio interview with the author of the wildly popular self-help series, Manual for Living, by Seth David Chernoff, you'll hear how to take your ownership over the choices you've made so far, analyze the priorities in your life, and trust your inner voice so you can start becoming the happiest and most fulfilled person you can be. You'll also hear the hidden dangers of making a financial goal your definition of success, and the only kinds of goals that really work. You'll hear the crazy human nature things almost all of us do that rob us from having fulfilling, loving lives and how to stop doing that. You'll hear about how to organize and take inventory of your life so you stop making the kind of sacrifices that jeopardize your happiness. You'll hear concrete examples of how we pay the price for the choices we make, but how that knowledge can make us empowered. You'll hear two honest questions you need to ask yourself about your job if the thought of going to work makes you sick. You'll hear how to take charge and say no already, why it's so hard for people, and when to do it. You'll hear the two fears that keep most people from changing and how to break free of them so you can take that leap of faith and feel good about it. Seth wrote his book series after getting cancer at age 25, a time when he thought he was at his healthiest because he was young, eating organic foods, working out all the time, meditating. It made him realize just how precious life is, and that even though you can't control everything that comes your way, you should try to make the most of everything you can. And in this audio interview, you'll hear how to do that. Now let's get going.
Hi, this is Chris Costello, and I've teamed up with Michael Senoff to bring you the world's best health-related interviews. So if you know anyone struggling with their weight, with cancer, diabetes, ADHD, autism, heart disease, or other health issues, send them over to Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. And our guest today is Seth David Chernoff. Seth is an award-winning author, a two-time cancer survivor, a marketing pro, and founder of multiple companies featured on radio, CBS, and many other national outlets. Seth, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Chris, thank you for having me.
You have written A Manual for Living, A User's Guide to the Meaning of Life.
It's been a lot of fun. The book was really designed in many ways to help me understand and get meaning for all the challenges that we go through in life. But as it kind of took shape, it became something that provided value to a lot of other people as well.
One of the descriptions about the Manual for Living is it's a guidebook to balance and connection, intimacy, relationship, peace and love, evolution and fulfillment. And it sounds like a lot of the inspiration came through your own journey and kind of your own experiences in life. You had several companies before you came down with cancer, is that right?
Right. I was in the middle of them when I did get sick. But you know, let's face it, life, this physical existence, tends to be chock full of challenges, whether they're illness-related or financial-related or emotional. I mean, we are full of incredible opportunities to grow. And as I went through those experiences in my life from even as a child, I would ask questions and try to understand why things happened a certain way, why people had to go through pain or even allow themselves to suffer. And later on, when I got sick, I started writing about those things and started to understand, you know, what it takes really to have a life of incredible fulfillment, really to find this lasting happiness that last longer than a short sitcom. I mean, really to find ways that we could find a level of fulfillment that was just above and beyond what was commonplace in our society. And I started writing about it, and that's really where the book came from. But I realized that in order to get to that level of happiness and fulfillment, you have to look at every area of your life. You know, you can't just say, boy, I'm waiting for the quick fix or the amazing relationship that's going to make everything great or the incredible job that's going to fix all my problems. No, you have have to look at every area of your life in order to fix all the tentacles of your life to make them what you want them to be.
I want to go back a little bit, though, on just your own experience. You were only 25 years old, right, when you first came down with cancer?
That's right. It was a Friday afternoon. Boy, I really thought I took good care of myself. I exercised. I ate organic foods, lots of vegetables. I meditated. I had a great job, great life. I'd just fallen in love with my wife. I thought I had everything together, and I felt like I was doing everything I was supposed to be doing. And so it was a Friday afternoon. I was sitting in the emergency room for a checkup of a lump that I had. It probably took a couple hours before I went through all the testing. And I finally was sitting with the doctor, with my now wife, who was my girlfriend at the time. And the doctor said to me, "You have cancer." And I said, "That can't be true. Like, there's no way I can take good care of myself. That just can't happen." And I just was in total denial, which is, of course, the first emotion you go through. Then you go through the why me and everything else. But he said to me, he said, "You know, we're going to operate tonight." And I said, "No, you're not. I need the weekend to think about this." And my mother is a naturopath. She's also a medical intuitive. So, you know, I really felt like I needed to talk to her, and she had some other things she wanted to try. And he said to me, "Look, it's 5:30 now, and I've got dinner plans tonight, and I'm going to cancel those plans, and I'm going to be back here at 7:30 because you need to have a procedure done this evening." And, of course, I really didn't want to believe it. I just really didn't. And I went home, and I cried, and then all of a sudden I couldn't walk, and I was just having a hard time functioning, and I ended up having the surgery, and I absolutely believed it saved my life. But the timing and everything that happened was absolutely transformational for me.
How was it transformational? What happened with that?
Well, a couple things. The first thing that happened is I had this incredible insight, and that was that no matter what you do in life, you can't avoid the inevitable. And for me, no matter how well I tried to take care of myself, I couldn't avoid cancer. No matter what I did, and I did everything that I thought was right, I couldn't avoid cancer. And there's a lot of really healthy people out there that get sick. You know, it's not only the things that you do in your life. Sometimes you just can't avoid the things that are going to happen to you in your life, except most of those things are an incredible gift. And for me, going through cancer was a tremendous gift. It taught me a lot. It gave me an opportunity to have a different understanding of life. It allowed me to get really close to death in order to have an amazing gratitude for life. There's so many things that I got as a result of going through it that you don't see right away. You end up seeing as you go through life. You have shock, you have anger, you have frustration, and thankfully I had it much easier than some people in this world who have gone through cancer, some of which, of course, haven't made it through. But for me, you know, you go through all these emotions, but then you go out the other side and you realize that you are given an amazing gift, that you have a new perspective of the way that you focus on your life, the way you handle time and money and work and the way you connect to other people. And that's really where the Manual for Living was born. I started writing it when I got cancer the first time, is that I had all these realizations about life, and I felt like they were very simple things that if everybody knew them, it would make their lives that much better.
So, Seth, you know, you've been through a really serious blow of going through cancer twice. What kind of recommendations do you have for people? You know, there's all sorts of things that happen to people that are just shocking for them, and how do they cope?
Well, the first thing that I discovered that I also connected with other people who have been through similar situations that had similar experience is that you get that close to death and you find gratitude. But gratitude isn't something that all of us have. And sometimes we go through life and we forget that this life is a gift. The fact that our spouse or our kids are alive or healthy or well is an amazing gift. And so there's this level of gratitude that we have to be able to express and experience and share in order to find that lasting happiness. So if that's the only thing you get from this conversation is to find a new, renowned sense of gratitude for your life, for your family, for the people that you connect with, that in and of itself will change your life. Beyond that, there's a number of other things that I could go into. The next biggest one is responsibility. You know, we're so quick in this society to blame everyone else for our problems. We think it's the government's fault or, you know, our job or, you know, our neighbor, and everyone else is the reason that we're not happy. And we have to take responsibility for our choices in life. You know, we get in a fight with our spouse and we say, you know, it's your fault and you said this and you did that. But really, we have a role to play, not only in that relationship, but in every relationship. And as soon as we can take responsibility for who we're being, then all of a sudden we're empowered to make different choices in our life. And those choices eventually lead us to a place where we can find a greater level of happiness. We get complacent and we get scared and we don't want to make changes. You know, when I got cancer the first time, I made all these decisions about how I was going to spend more time doing different things in my life. I was going to cut back on my work, but I didn't. In fact, I worked twice as hard. I had two boys, you know, worked multiple companies. I was extremely, extremely busy. And then in the meantime, I was writing my book at 1 a.m, lunchtime, you know, whenever I could. And that was my life for 5 years, and I just couldn't get it to slow down. I wanted it to, but I couldn't. And then I got cancer a second time.
What was that? Were you just driven to a feeling of, you know, I've got to get this stuff done, I don't have much time, or what do you think motivated all that?
You know, excellent questions, and they're the same questions that I asked myself even when I was a kid, is that why we live a certain way, except we kind of get in these patterns, and as much as we want to change them, sometimes we can't, or we don't let ourselves change them. And so my desire for success, if you will, or to have financial security, or to have a nice house for my family, was greater than the desire for my own internal well-being and balance and health and happiness. And so I made different choices. Now, the choices aren't wrong or right, but the choices I made had a price. And those prices included, I lost time with my kids, I got sick, I had a price to pay for the choices that I made. Now, looking back, the price I paid was much greater than any gains that I got through the choices that I made, but they got me here. So when I went through cancer a second time, in the middle of it, I made the resolution, but this time I said, you know what, I just can't do this again, because I know if I got cancer again, I wasn't going to make it. So I said, you know, if I get through this one, I am absolutely making some changes. And that time I did. We sold a couple companies. I shut one down. I simplified my life. I really made sure I was home a lot to be with my kids and spend a lot of quality time with my spouse. But sometimes it takes these amazing outside circumstances to get us to make the most important changes in our life. Because on its own, I had a very hard time making that choice. But when I had this amazing, enlightening understanding and realization about my life, the choices were very easy. And I just said, okay, this is it. It's time. And then I revamped my life.
Right. And it's interesting, Seth, what you say about, you know, we often make the choices that we think are going to guarantee health and a good outcome. And then we have perhaps some blinders on the things that we do that actually are fighting against that. It sounds kind of like that was going on a little bit.
Absolutely. You know, it's kind of like where you go to McDonald's and you get a Happy Meal, and it's cheaper than going to the supermarket, except you pay a price. You pay a price of your health by not putting good, organic, wholesome fruits and vegetables in your body. You pay a price. It's just not always the price you pay in that moment. Eventually, you'll pay a price for the choices you make. You know, if you choose not to exercise and you get far overweight and you become diabetic, well, you paid a price. You might have saved money in the moment by not buying organic foods, but you have a price to pay. But life's the same way. You know, you choose a job that's incredibly demanding, that's not very fulfilling, it's not rewarding, you will pay a price for making those choices. And so if we look at our lives and we kind of dissect it in an area where we can take an inventory, so we say, you know, let me look at the quality of the relationship with my spouse. What am I doing? Who am I being? How can I make that better? Well, it's usually just a couple little things that make most of our relationships that much better. The same goes for our work. But if we dissect our life in a way that we start to understand the choices we're making, that empowers us to make different choices, to make better choices.
For more interviews on health, mind, body, and spirit, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. And so another thing you talk about in Manual for Living is change and it being very difficult for people. And why do you think it's so hard for people to change?
That's a very, very good question. And I relate it back to death. Death is the ultimate destiny of all of our lives. We know that in this physical existence, we will all die, and we don't know when. And that unknown is very scary for so many of us. Now, if you've been through this catastrophic illness like I have and many people have, sometimes you get this peace. You have peace with death, and you just accept it, and you don't get as scared of it as you might otherwise. But it's that same unknown that paralyzes us from making choices in our life. We're in a bad job, but we're scared what happens when we let go of it. You know, we're in a dysfunctional or abusive relationship, but we're scared to leave it because we don't want to be alone, and we don't know what's on the other side of that door. Except the only way to find out is to take that leap of faith. The only way to know if there's somebody better out there for us is to leave our relationship if it's a bad one and we know we're not supposed to be in there. And the same with a job. If it's dysfunctional, if it's taking away our life, if it's not something that's fulfilling and rewarding, we can actually make choices that are better for us. We can find a place that we belong that is more rewarding.
So, Seth, what are some things people can do to make change easier?
Well, I would say we need to focus on the areas that we can control. We can control who we are, who we're being, and the actions we take. We cannot control the reactions other people have with us. So, for example, if you come home and you have a conversation with your spouse and they get very angry with you, you cannot control that. But you can control who you're being, if you're kind, if you're expressive, gracious, if you're caring. And so I think we need to start with the things that we can control and take responsibility for those things. You know, if our job isn't everything we want it to be, and if your job isn't fulfilling, rewarding, well, the first thing you need to do is really be honest with yourself. You know, are you giving 100% of yourself to this job? Are you really being of service to your customers, to your boss, to your coworkers? And if you're giving 100% of yourself to this job and everything you can, you're trying to make this job as great as possible and it's still not what it's supposed to be, then maybe you need to make a change. But we have to take responsibility for the choices we make, either who we're being or the actions we're taking. And so, again, if you look at your life and the quality of every relationship, the quality of your job, you take responsibility for the things you can control, very quickly you're empowered to make different choices. And that very thing can help you find a greater level of happiness and fulfillment.
Another thing you talk about in Manual for Living is, you know, why it's so difficult to live in the moment.
I say in the Manual for Living, too, that, you know, most of these topics and things that I talk about aren't things that you haven't heard in some way or you don't already inherently know. A lot of people talk about living in the moment, except there's a perspective that we need to have because most of us still don't do it. You know, we're so obsessed with processing and understanding the choices we made yesterday and dragging all that baggage forward, and then we're planning and thinking about everything that's happening tomorrow that we miss the moment. And that's why I love radio so much, because you're fully in the moment. There's not a lot else going on. You get to be fully present and dive deep into one part of life. And that's really how we should approach our world. When we connect with our spouse or with our children or our parents, we can be fully present. We don't have to be on our phone or reading the paper or doing 8 million things at the same time. We can actually be fully present. But it takes diligence and it takes effort, and it requires that we actually make choices in that moment that are towards our overall well-being and the well-being of those that we care about. But I think it has a lot to do as well with our priorities. You know, sometimes we feel like our priority is our work when we know in our heart it's our family and caring for the people that we love or our spirituality, except the actions we take on a daily basis don't always mirror our priorities.
How do people focus in on those priorities? Do you have exercises you recommend, or how do you figure out what is important to you?
I absolutely do. You know, let's also realize that in this day and age, there's a lot of people going through some really hard times. And again, you know, for me, it was cancer and some financial challenges and a million other things. But for many people, it's, you know, losing a job or foreclosing on your home. And so even in the midst of all this chaos, there's an opportunity for all of us. And so, you know, we have to just kind of take a breath and we have to look at our life and say, what are the choices that we're making that make my life look this way? And so what my exercise that I always tell people to do is just take a break. Stop for just one moment and look at your life. When my life was incredibly chaotic and I got sick, I had to dissect my life and look at all the commitments that I'd made, most of which I wasn't doing all that well because I had too many of them. And I had to kind of prioritize them. I said, okay, great. Clearly my top priority is taking care of my family. That's really important to me. My spirituality, very important to me. Beyond that, you know, it's my work. My work is very important to me. So how do I organize my life so I'm not sacrificing the things that matter most? How do I make my day so that when I go to bed at night, I don't feel like, gosh, I wish I would have spent a few minutes with my son today or my daughter? So I have kind of a process of doing an inventory, a daily inventory. And we look at our life and we say, gosh, where am I spending my time? But we know that most of our time we spend sleeping and working. And so I say, okay, great. Well, if your work, since you spend most of your time there throughout the year, isn't that rewarding, fulfilling, gratifying, and it's not something that makes you excited to do, then perhaps you need to look at changing the way you go to work, at changing your job. And then maybe you can reallocate some of that excess time to the things that really matter, so that every day you actually allocate time to the things that are most important to you. So if it's your children and your spouse and your spirituality, which those things are very important to me, I make sure I block time out for those right away so I don't get distracted by all the other things that I have to do every day that we all have to do, and I miss the things that are most important.
Obviously, you're very successful as an entrepreneur and a business owner. You said you had so many opportunities coming your way. Now, is it partly just being able to learn to say the word no?
Why is saying no so hard? And I think that is a big part of it, because people are afraid to say no. They don't want to hurt other people's feelings. They don't want to express the fact that they can't handle it all. We all want to handle it all. You know, we've got big shoulders. We can take it on. But we know we can't. You know, we're all overworked. We have too many responsibilities. At the end of the day, I don't know a single person who gets done with their task list at the end of the day. We just don't. And so we look at our priorities and we say, great, if I don't get through everything, at least I got through what was most important. And that's the distinction. But like you said, saying no is a big part of that. You have to be able to say no. You have to know your limits. And for me, I got sick because I was unable to say no. You know, I got cancer the second time, I believe, because I just couldn't say no. I was too driven to say yes, always yes. And like you said, opportunity showed up and you say, wow, great opportunity. I guess I have to do that. And no, you don't. You need to take care of the things that are most important, and sometimes that's taking care of you.
And it's interesting to me, because we've interviewed a lot of the gurus and the transformational leader types, and I often wonder, you know, what is the motivation there? Because many of these folks are quite wealthy. You know, they've already done just so many things that have been successful, and yet I see them continuing and continuing to build on what they've done. What is that all about?
It's funny you say that. So I had made all these changes, you know, my life. I simplified everything. I took my life to a place where I felt like it was quite in balance. And then I published the Manual for Living, right? And all of a sudden I'm booked on just tons and tons of radio interviews and articles that I have to write, and I'm booked. And I'm sitting with my wife, and she says, you know, I get the feeling that you're getting out of balance again. And I had this momentary flash where I realized that I cannot talk about this unless I'm living it. And so I had to dramatically change the way I was promoting the book and talking about the work. And I can't talk about balance if I'm not the one living it. And it's not an easy thing. And I know some of these gurus you're talking about that are incredibly successful and incredibly busy because of all the things they take on. For me, that's just not how I feel that I am going to perform at my best. And so I made some conscious decisions that I just can't do every interview. I just can't do every request of my time. Even though this work is extremely important to me and I want to give it to everybody, there's only so much I can do. There's only so many hours in a day, and I only have so much energy. Going through cancer twice, the surgeries and everything else, I just don't have as much energy as I used to. I used to be able to sleep 4 hours a night and be just amazing for the day. Now, I need my sleep. I need some downtime. I need time with my kids. I just need that, or I start to feel myself get sick or not well. Back to what you said earlier about being in the moment is that we get distracted by this grandeur or this vision of something else. We get out of the moment and we forget all these principles that we put in place that are there to help our lives be more fulfilled. They're there to help us be well and healthy and happy. And so when I was writing the manual, I realized that people didn't have time to read a whole book. Most people don't. But they have time to do one little thing that's going to make their day just a little bit better or make that moment a little bit better. And that's exactly the format that I wrote the book in, because if you can do one thing that makes your day just a little bit better, that's worthwhile. That's worth your investment. It's worth your time. But if every day you do one thing, that will actually transform your life.
And I really like the quotes in Manual for Living. They're very inspiring in the front of each chapter.
Thank you. Yeah, it kind of was designed to put things into perspective. You know, we talk about things that people should know about, like breathing. Breathing is so essential to our life, except when things get stressful, that's the first thing that goes out the window. We stop breathing. We get this shallow breath. It's not very fulfilling. All of a sudden, we take a moment to stop and breathe. And then that moment changes. And so, yeah, each section has a little quote that kind of puts the overreaching moment into some type of reality for you.
One of the things that a lot of people have trouble with is trust. And you talk about that in your book, Seth. And why is it so hard to trust?
Well, trust is a big part of life. And it's definitely one of the core tenets of a fulfilled life. And it's not just trusting others, it's trusting ourselves. It's having faith in our own life that things are going to work out. You know, we talked about one of the problems that people have, why they don't change, why they stay in bad relationships or dysfunctional jobs. And one of the reasons is that they're scared of the unknown. The bigger reason is they don't have faith. They don't trust that things are going to work out. You know, in our darkest hours of our life, we can get up in the morning and say, gosh, I just don't know how I'm going to get through the day. I don't know how I'm going to face the demons in front of me. But then all of a sudden, it's the end of the day, and you're sitting in bed, and you say, gosh, I got through it. I don't know how. I got through it. When I was going through cancer, I also had a whole bunch of other things going on at the same time, and I couldn't see the light at the end of the tunnel. I would just look through it, and it was just dark. And I really needed some hope. And so I just had to dig really deep to find that level of faith that things were going to work out, that I had to trust that things were going to work out the way they were supposed to. But as I learned that over time, the worst things that happened in my life, I have faith now. I have this undeterred trust. But I'd like for everyone to have that and everyone to realize that no matter what you're going through, it's going to work out. It may not work out. And in fact, I guarantee you will not work out in the way you think it will. But it'll work out. And it'll work out for the best. For you, for the community, for humanity at large, it just does. It works out in a manner and method that's supportive of who we are.
This is Chris Costello reporting for Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Let's look at that a little more deeply, because if you're somebody that's like maybe caught in some of the problems with the economy and, you know, a lot of people have lost their homes, gone through financial ruin, how do they get through that? I mean, is it a matter of having a different mindset? What do they do?
Those are hard things. And in the moment of that trauma, that difficulty, it's very difficult to have a discussion about how to change your mindset. It just is. You know, when life's great, we're not praying for help. It's only when life is very traumatic and challenging that we're begging for any help that we can get. And whether it's for you, it's your religion, it's your spirituality, it's something, you have to have some understanding that there is a divine purpose for your life and for the things that you're going through. And that things have a reason for being. When I look back on cancer, they were some of the greatest gifts that I ever received. They taught me so much about life. They gave me life. They gave me the opportunity to reconnect with my world. And so I would say if you're going through some really hard times, you have to take a moment, be kind to yourself, and find that level of faith. If you need to go to church or synagogue or mosque to pray, then do that. If you need to take some time in nature and sit under a big oak tree, then do that. But you have to find that level of peace and that understanding deep within yourself that it's going to work out. We all have this, I believe, this inner knowing, this inner truth. And whether you believe that's your soul or that's your higher self or the universe at large, we have this guiding light that kind of connects us to where we're going and that gives us the answers to the hardest questions that we face. But we often ignore that in the moment of extreme difficulty. So we have to take a moment to listen to that and listen to our inner voice and see what it's trying to tell us.
One of the chapters in Manual for Living is on financial freedom. And, you know, we just talked about how a lot of people are struggling with that. Let's talk a little bit about that. You know, what is the whole money issue all about for a lot of people?
Yeah, great question. I have a real hard time with the relationship that we all have towards money and even my own relationship towards money. And when you don't have money, you think the world has just stopped and that everything is falling apart. And again, I've been through financial challenges. I know what they're like. And I went through them when I was sick. So it kind of was just insult to injury. But even in the midst of that, you have to realize that money is just that. It's money. It was designed as a bartering tool. And for many of us, it has become the tool that controls our life. We deem our value in life by the amount of money we have, by the size of our house, the quality of our car. That's how we give value to who we are. And it's just not true. We are not our things. We're not our possessions. We're not our job. We are just who we are. And so if we get back to who we're being in any given moment and we realize what our priorities are in life, which again, for me are my family, my spirituality, you realize that money up to a certain point feeds my family. But beyond that, it cannot be in control of me. I have to have a new relationship to it, and I think we all have to have a new relationship to it. You see people right now who have gone through so much financial turmoil. They lost their home. They lost all their money. But somehow, they've come out the other side with a whole new perspective on life because they have their family, and they have a reason for living, and the house that they're holding onto so tight, you know what? They can live without that. But they can't live without certain things. And they realize that their house is actually kind of lower down the list when they come to truth with everything. How much is enough, right? That's the ultimate question. How much is enough? There's a study I remember reading about when I was in college. We took all these business courses. And they asked each person, you know, well, how much money is enough for you to be successful? And for every person in the class, it was a different number. But what happens, you realize in life, is when you get to that number, you realize that it's not that number anymore. Okay, gosh, as soon as I have $100,000, I'm going to be successful. You get to $100,000, you realize it just became a half a million or a million. You never get there. And so you have to find peace within yourself that it's not about that, that your success and who you're being is not about the size of your bank account. But we just have this dysfunctional reality that it's about how much money we have, that somehow that is going to make us happy. And it never will. We can't put aside happiness for a later date. We can put money aside, but happiness in the moment, we can't ever relive that.
So obviously, Seth, you know, experience with cancer and writing a Manual for Living, which is just really a very thorough guide for people on living a fulfilled life. You talk about spirituality and physical limitations. I'd like to share that a little bit with our listeners.
The first book in the manual is called Reality, and that's the book we're talking about. And there's actually three books in it. This first book is all about our physical experience because we have to come to grips with this physical experience. We have to get a heightened perspective on how we're living this physical life. You see, we are a physical body, but we're actually a soul. We're so much more than that. This physical body will die. It's designed to die. That's just part of the evolution of being a human being. And so if we can take this new understanding about how we live our life and our relationship to our physical body and this physical world, many times a lot of these problems that we face, they become less so. They don't have the same effect or control over us, like money, like a house, like a fancy car, because we realize that we are a soul and that our time is limited here and that we have a higher purpose for living. And so when we look at how do we get to this place of fulfilling those deepest parts of ourselves, the only way to do that is to find service. That's the only way. The only people that I've ever met that are truly happy are people who have found service. And that's not to say that you sacrifice yourself through that process, but you actually give of yourself. And sometimes you're rewarded emotionally, sometimes it's financially. But you find a way that your reactions, your work in life has to do with service, has to do with giving out into the world, not entirely obtaining. Obtaining will happen as a side effect of the gifts that you give. But we have to be focused on the giving part of our lives. And through doing that, we'll find a whole new level of happiness. And even in the midst of the darkest times that you face, being of service will give you solace.
It's very inspirational to hear you say that.
Thank you.
What do you think is the biggest problem that we face right now in the United States as a society?
Well, actually, I think it goes back to responsibility. I really do. I think that we have to really take responsibility for who we are, for the people that we elect, that are responsible for the choices that we make as a country. We're responsible for the lifestyle we lead, for the work that we do, for the actions we take, and for who we're being in any given moment. Again, it's so easy to blame everyone else for our misfortune. You know, when I got cancer, I could easily blame everyone else for any issue that happened in my life, but it wasn't their fault. I need to take responsibility for my own level of happiness or the lack thereof. And in this moment, my happiness is very much dependent on the choices that I make and who I choose to be. I could absolutely be vile or depressed or disappointed, or I could choose to see all the amazing things in my life. Even though I might be in pain, I can see the amazing things. I could find gratitude. And I think if we can all take a moment and find a way to take responsibility for the choices we made that made our life the way it is, it's not everyone else's fault. These are choices that we made. Our lives are the sum total of every choice we've made in our life. And so if we're not happy in this moment, if we don't like the way our life turned out, guess what? You can change it. You're in the driver's seat. You can't blame everybody else for your problems. And I think that responsibility is something that we have to start with. We have to take responsibility for who we're being in this life and the choices that we're making.
I think when we take responsibility, it ends up kind of having a ripple effect, doesn't it?
It does. And it's very empowering. Very empowering. You know, when you're going through cancer, you realize how much of your life is outside of your control. That you could die, you could go through some traumatic side effect. That part is really outside of your control. But the part that's within your control are the choices you make and the reactions you take to the actions that are happening in your life. When I went through cancer the first time and the doctor told me, I need to save your life, basically. We're going to operate tonight. I begrudgingly did it, but he saved my life. And I was very grateful, and to this day, I'll be always grateful for that. Except for 2 weeks later, after I had kind of started to recover, he came to me and he said, okay, it's time to do a second surgery. We need to take out all your lymph nodes. So what did I do? I went online. I looked on the internet and I found pictures of people who had their entire chest opened up and all their lymph nodes taken out. And I said to myself, absolutely not. You got the cancer. I'm really supportive of that. But now I need to make my own choices. And my choice in this moment is I'm not going to go through with that. And if I have to pay a price, that's okay. It's my choice. It's my price to pay. But I feel like you got the cancer, and I don't feel like there's anything else in me. And that was following my own truth. And that was the decision that I made. And I didn't go through with that surgery. And I instead took his advice of going through a very rigorous monitoring process of PET scans and blood tests and stuff every month. But that was a choice that I made. And I made that decision consciously. Now, I could have made a different one. I could have had the surgery. It would have been my choice. And so those are the things that I faced that were pivotal in what became who I am in this moment, the choice that I made. But we all have those choices. We all in every moment have amazing choices that will determine our level of happiness or service in our life. We're making them right now. We just think that they're insignificant, but they're not. Every one of those choices determines quality of our life.
And that is so powerful. And we all have such access now to information with the internet, you know, and just to hear you talk about how you made your decisions. We're so lucky to have that now.
We are. You're absolutely right. There's an excess of information, sometimes too much, but there's so much information that if you really are conscious about not only your health, but your life in general, you can learn so much and be more educated about the choices that you're making.
I just want to ask you also, you know, what do you hope to achieve with Manual for Living?
Well, this book is very much a labor of love for me. The information I feel like is very important. I've been through some extremely challenging things in my life, as many people have. And my goal is to find a very simple way to disseminate a lot of that information. So maybe it doesn't have to be as painful for you or for your listeners. Maybe they can go through life and not have to be challenged as much as I did. Maybe they can make their lives a little bit better by some of the information in the book. So my hope is that people read it and they make some positive changes in their life. And if you don't buy the book, you can always go to the website and read all kinds of information about it. But my hope is that people really will embrace a lot of the gratitude and levels of commitment that I talk about in the book that a lot of people talk about, but I think that'll make their lives that much better.
Wonderful. And can you give our listeners a website to go to?
Absolutely. My website is manualforliving.com. And if you go there, there's a whole list of all the local bookstores that carry it and Amazon and iPad and everywhere else you can find the book and you can learn about me and connect with me. I'd love to chat with you and hear your stories. And if you buy the book or if you don't, I'd love to connect with you anyway.
Thank you so much, Seth. We really appreciate talking with you, and hopefully we'll get to talk on the other two books too.
Sounds fantastic. Thank you, Chris.
That's the end of our interview, and I hope you've enjoyed it. For more great health-related interviews, go to Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.
That's the end of our interview with Seth David Chernoff. I hope you found it helpful. And for more great interviews like this, go to Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.